For those of you that are self-employed, the self-employed person can deduct up to 15% of their net profit on the business by investing in a SEP, a Simplified Employee Pension Plan. Now, there are some guidelines for that, but that is like a really big IRA. So if you made a net profit on your small business of $100,000, you are then able to invest tax-deductible, growing tax-deferred, like a traditional IRA, $15,000 that year, and shelter it. So those of you that are self-employed that are looking for a way to get that money out of your income and put it into an investment and grow it, the Simplified Employee Pension Plan for the self-employed is the way to go. Then there's the 401k, the 403b, and the 457 plans. Most companies have completely done away with traditional pension plans, according to Forbes magazine. So these 401ks and 403bs, what they do is they give you a lot of choices. But there's a downside to these things. If you put nothing in your 401k, how much is in there?
Nothing.
Okay, unlike the old pension plans where just for showing up and breathing, your company was setting aside money for you. Okay, those days are gone. Now the good thing about the 401ks and 403bs and 457s are that they are portable. What that means is when you leave, you take it with you. Before with the pension plans, you had to be there a certain number of years and become vested before you had any ownership in that retirement plan, and then it was very limited. So you were really not building up a nest egg, and with today's world of change, as people are going through 14, 16, 18 jobs in their lifetime, they need investment programs that move with them when they move. And I'll teach you about when to do that and how to do that. The 401k, how many of you have a 401k available to you? Good. Okay, that means you work for a corporation of some kind, a company of some kind. A 403B is pretty much the same thing as a 401K with a few minor differences, but it's available in nonprofit organizations like churches. It's available in hospitals to you docs and nurses, and it's available in other settings like, as I said, the nonprofits, the churches, those. Oh, teachers. Teachers also have the 403Bs available to them. Okay? And it's slightly different. One thing about the 403B that's different, that's pretty cool, you cannot take your 401K and move it out to an IRA while you work with a company. You have to leave the company in order for that thing to be loosened. Okay? Your 403Bs, you can move them out of there into IRAs while you still work there. So some of you teachers who have lousy options, go set up an IRA and roll a bunch of your 403B out while you work there, and let's get some better mutual funds over in that IRA if you need to, and it's all still sheltered. Did that make sense? So you can move the 403B while you want. Now, 457 is a different animal. You cannot roll it around. It's stuck. That is the deferred comp plan. Usually in a government setting is where you find 457s, a government employee. Deferred comp means we are deferring, putting off our compensation. So all it is you just didn't take your paycheck now, so they didn't tax you on it. You just put it off, deferred the compensation, and you laid it over here in an investment so it'll grow. So it has the same effect of being a pre-tax investment, but there's some minute differences, okay? Because it technically is just deferred, put off income. Now, when you're looking at your 401k, 403b, or 457s, do not use the guaranteed investment contracts. These are GICs. These are basically a money market account. It's a lousy long-term investment. And when you look at the investment lesson, what you'll find is that you always have to make more than 6% on your money if you're investing longer than 5 years. Most of these money market type accounts will not make more than 5 or 6% on average. So you're just breaking even with taxes and inflation. You do not use money market type accounts in your long-term investing inside of these things. So stay away from the GICs. Well, I put some in there so that I was safe. You put some in your emergency fund so that you're safe. You put some into becoming debt-free so that you're safe. This is investing, and it is safe long-term if you leave it alone in good growth stock mutual funds. Now, you should be funding your plan whether your company matches or not. But the plans that have company matching provide great returns. But I'm amazed. If I take this $1,000 and I try to bring it home, it looks suspiciously like $700, doesn't it? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. And so it's amazing to me that if what the government is saying is that I can take $1,000 and I can bring it home or I can put it in pre-tax before they take the $300 out, okay? And yet I have people that come up to me and say, well, Dave, I'm not going to put money in my company's 401k because they don't match. That-a-way, punish them by you being broke. What's up with that? See, what the match is coming from Congress. Because it's kind of like I said, okay, here's $300. It was a pretend thing. Don't really do it, okay? Here's $300, okay? Take this and keep it through your whole life and earn as much interest with compound interest on it as you can. And then at retirement time, you have to give me the $300 back. That's what the government is saying by letting you use your tax money all of those years to grow with by doing pre-tax investing. So even if your company doesn't match, we're still going to want to look at those 401ks at some point in the process because we want to keep the government's hands off of it and make sure that you don't get messed up. So even if your company doesn't match, keep the government's hands off of this money. Now, rollovers, rolling over an IRA. You should always, see always is underlined, always roll over all retirement plans that you can out to an IRA when you leave the company. Never leave it in the old company. Never take your 401k to the new company and put it in the new 401k. Well, why? Well, here's why. They don't match it at the new company, so there's no benefit to moving it over there except that it's pre-tax. When you roll it out to an IRA, there is no taxes. You moved it from one coat to another coat. That's all you did. It never got cold. Okay? We just switched coats. All right? That's all a rollover is. And so you never paid any taxes, but your new 401k has 10 or 12 mutual funds to pick from. Your old 401k had 7 or 8 mutual funds to pick from, right? Something like that. So why would you not go into the open market and choose among 10,000 funds and have the flexibility to move it around later if I wanted to another IRA because I didn't like that fund later? Okay? When I put it in a 401k, I limit my choices. So anytime I can spring that money free of the 401k and move it out here into my IRA because the company got sold and changed names, that'll activate your 401k. How many of you have gone through a merger where your 401k, you had the option to move it out? You know what I'm talking about? A lot of mergers and consolidations going on, okay? So in that case, you can move your 401k out because you changed companies even though your desk never moved, okay? But if you actually move desks to another company, never take it with you because you limit your options. Always roll it to an IRA. And you want to do what's called a direct transfer. If you bring the money home and you say, all right, I left the company, send me the check. The company, when they send you your 401k money, is required to withhold 20% because the estimates are you're not going to reinvest that money within 60 days into an IRA. And if you don't, you have taxes on it of about 40%, and the government wants to make sure some of that was withheld. Okay? So if you have $10,000 and they send you the check, now you have $8,000. But you have 60 days to put $10,000 into an account to keep from being penalized. Only you've only got eight. So instead what you do is a direct transfer. Now a direct transfer is coat to coat. It's not coat to Dave to coat. Does that make sense? We're going to go directly from the 401k to the mutual fund covered with an IRA inside that coat. All right, and the way you do that is you go to the mutual fund people that you're dealing with and you write down, you say, okay, this is the mutual fund I want, and you fill out the paperwork and you buy the mutual fund, but you don't give them a check. You fill out another form called a direct transfer form. That form goes from the mutual fund company back to your 401k, tells them to send it straight over there, don't send it home and then over there. Okay, because it'll cause you a cash flow bind, it'll cause you a mess. So a direct transfer rollover is what you always want to do. Now, you always want to do a Roth IRA and do a rollover to a Roth IRA so that it's growing tax-free if you meet these three things. And this is going to mean usually that you're later on in the baby steps. You're maybe baby step 5 or 6, things are going pretty good. Almost all the debt's gone, all the debt is gone except the house for sure at this point. And if you're going to roll to a Roth IRA, these are the three guidelines that make it where it makes sense. Number one, you will need to have saved over $700,000 by age 65. Now, that is not a law. That's some mathematics that I did. Basically, what that means is if there's $700,000 or more in your nest egg that's going to be coming out of other retirement plans or an IRA, that's going to throw you with mandatory withdrawals into a top tax bracket. In which case, the Roth IRA is always going to make sense because you're probably not in the top tax bracket now. All right? And so that $700,000, when you back out all the formulas, is going to make your annual income high enough that you're in the top tax bracket at that point. So if your nest egg is going to be $700K or greater at 70 years old, always roll to a Roth IRA if you meet these other two guidelines. Now, the other guidelines are that you need to be able to pay your taxes separately. If you take $10,000 and you roll it to a Roth IRA, the taxes become due. That's what we're talking about. Taxes, no penalties, on that $10,000 will be around a fourth, around $2,500. Okay? If you crack that nest egg open and take $2,500 out of it and pay the taxes, you left $7,500 in the Roth IRA. Now, if we had set that $2,500 aside and let it compound, it would have grown to enough to pay the taxes. So you just broke even if you crack the nest egg and take the money out. The advantage to rolling to the Roth is, if you take the whole $10,000, stick it into a Roth, and you come over here and pay your taxes, it's as if you have invested in another $2,500 or 25% into your retirement plan at that point, because that whole thing is going to grow tax-free, and we paid the taxes over here. That's when it starts to make sense. So if you can't pay the taxes without cracking the nest egg, don't do a Roth IRA rollover. You could roll it later, or you can even do a partial. Let's say you had $100,000 and you didn't have an extra $25,000 over here to pay your taxes. You could move 50 one year, 10 another year, 8 another year, as you could pay the taxes separately. You're allowed to break your IRAs up and move them around into several different places. IRAs can be broken into lots of little pieces. Also understand you cannot do a Roth rollover by law if you have a household income the year you're doing the rollover of over $100,000. Now, you understand all taxes become due on the rollover amount anytime you're rolling to a Roth IRA, because that's the one that grows tax-free. But even if you can't pay taxes, at least roll to a regular IRA, because there's no taxes due and you've got all the choices. Is that clear as mud?
Yes.
Good. Okay, good. Now, never, ever, ever borrow on your retirement account, no matter what. Why? Because we don't borrow, number one. But number two, let's talk through borrowing on a 401k. If you have a 401k, most places give you the option to borrow on it. Really dumb idea for three basic reasons. Never borrow for three basic reasons. Number one, it sounds smart in the Money Magazine article that you read. If you unplug your 401k and pay yourself back the interest. If I borrow $10,000 on my 401k, then I'm paying back 6 or 7% interest or 5% interest, and the interest goes back to me. So it sounds wise. Well, instead of paying interest to someone else, I'm paying myself interest. Isn't that wise? Well, not really, because you unplugged a 14 or a 15% mutual fund in order to pay yourself 6. This doesn't make sense mathematically, and when you compound that out over time, that's a huge mistake. Number two problem with borrowing on your 401k is you might find a better job, or they might give you the opportunity to look for another job. Right? Meaning you leave the company. If you leave the company because of a job change situation, that loan is due in full, lump sum, within 60 days, or it's considered by the IRS an early withdrawal, and they're going to charge you all the penalties and interest and everything on it. Now, let me tell you, when you do not need a big tax bill, is at a time of unemployment. It's like a double dip on Murphy, right? Think through this. That's exactly the wrong time to have a loan come due that's going to cost you 40%. So you take a $20,000 or a $30,000 401k loan, we're talking about $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 in taxes and penalties here that you're going to have to come up with on the very year that you've had a bad year because you got laid off. Never borrow on your 401k. The third reason is if you die, you are also deemed to have left the company. And once you left the company feet first, you also have the same problem. Well, you don't. Your spouse does, or whoever you left this thing to. And they have to. They have to be able to pay the loan back within 60 days of your death. So you're either going to use up some life insurance money or create a huge mess financially for these people who were left behind. Because a spouse can take an IRA without any tax implications. A spouse can take a 401k without any tax implications upon death of the other one. All right? But they can't unless they repay the loan in this situation. And boy, that is the last time a widow needs to be figuring this stuff out. A widower needs to be figuring this stuff out is within 60 days of losing the one that they love the most on this planet. So there you go. Don't do that. Now, if you're a federal government worker, you have the standard thrift plan available to you. It is a fabulous plan, by the way, for those of you that are federal workers. I've done extensive research on this, and I want you to put 40% of your money in the C fund, 40% of your money in the S fund, and 20% of your money in the I fund. Now, when we do the mutual fund lesson, we tell you to put money across four types of mutual funds: growth and income, growth, aggressive growth, and international. Aggressive growth is also called a small cap because it's what size companies?
Small.
Right. Growth is also called a general stock fund. It's kind of in the middle. International is called international because the companies are where? All right. Now, C plan is the common stock plan. It has been available in the thrift plan the longest and has averaged about 17% over the last 9 or 10 years. It's an excellent little mutual fund. It is modeled off of the S&P 500 index, so it's a real stable type growth fund. So I would put 40% in that. The S fund stands for small companies. That would make this an aggressive growth fund. Now, it's modeled after the Barclays Extended Market Index, which is just a fancy way of saying a whole lot of the small company funds are indexed out, and this is a good stable average of that. It has averaged about 14% in the last 10 years, 7 years, 8 years, that kind of a thing. So look at the S fund. So you've got some in common stock, kind of calm, some in the S fund, that aggressive side, that's an aggressive growth fund, and then we're going to put a little bit over in international, 20%, because it's not done that great. It's only made 8 or 9% in the last 10 years or so, and the I fund is the Barclays EAFE index. Stands for Europe, Australia, and Far East. So where are those companies that they're buying stocks in? Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So it's a true international fund, but it's not performed that well at around 8 or 9%. So we're going to put a little in there just to be diversified, and diversification means to
spread
out, right? And so when we've got our money spread across all these different types, then as a federal government employee, you're going to be in good shape.